Thanks for joining us for this episode. And before we get started, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. If you want to learn more about any guest featured in this episode or access any content or resources discussed, be sure to check out the show notes in the episode description. We hope today's episode increases truth and inspires hope in the lives of your church, your business, your family, and beyond. Welcome to the Must Increase Podcast.
Welcome to this episode, and I'm really excited to be joined by a special guest today. It is Dr. Mike Lester, who is the president of Veritas Baptist College, but also one of my former instructors and teachers when I went to college. And so it is good to have you with us today.
Hey, Luke. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to our discussion today.
Yes, and I am too. And as we were, you know, kind of leading in, talking off the mic here, you know, preparing technically and all that stuff, I'll be honest with you, this is something that I have become really fascinated with. So I'm a parent. I have a 6-year-old daughter. Obviously, college seems like a long way out, but I know you're a girl dad of what, five. I always lose count for some reason. So you know that time flies, and it'll be here before you know it. And so, you know, I've already started to think about education for her and how that's going to look and so forth and her options. And, you know, with me, like I said, to give a little bit of our personal background, I went to West Coast Baptist College where you served for years. So I went one of the more conventional routes, and I actually physically went to a college and loved my experience there. But now you've transitioned to being the president of a college that is 100% remote and online. This is a huge demographic shift, but this is an up and coming thing. It seems to be more popular even before the pandemic when everything was remote. It was already kind of catching on. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation of maybe contrasting the two different options, if you will, and just kind of seeing, you know, maybe if, you know, this online education is truly a viable option to maybe something on campus. And so I know that's a very broad beginning there, but I wanted to kind of open the conversation with your initial thoughts on this topic.
Sure. Yeah. So sometimes people get the idea that distance education is a relatively new thing, especially in Christian education. As I was doing a little bit of research on just the history of distance education, as far as in the Christian setting, the earliest examples I could find of distance education for ministry training. In fact, I have the book right here. It's Galatians, it's Ephesians, it's Philippians, nice. It's Colossians, it's 2 Timothy. What were all of those epistles? They were examples of distance education, different technology, different platform, but Paul could not physically get there, so via distance. Wow. He was training and counseling.
I've never actually...
So that's my opening statement.
Because you know what? And you know what? I would not put it past Dr. Mike Lester to use the Bible as his opening argument, ultimate authority, because you are the Bible guy. That's actually a really excellent point. You know, I was actually in a service the other day where the pastor was speaking from, I believe it's the book of Colossians. And correct me if I'm wrong here. Maybe it was a different one. But I believe he made the point that there's really no evidence that Paul actually ever physically visited the church at Colossae there. But he did write a letter, and that was obviously inspired scripture. And so that's a really great way of putting it. I mean, because where would we be, you know, whether we look at the first century church or even now, you know, as again, that's inspired scripture. And for us as the modern day church, even to use as instruction and support, where would we be without that remote learning? And so, yeah, powerful. I think we can end the interview here. It's been great talking to you. You know, case closed. Good. No, that's.
So no one is alive. No one is alive today who heard Paul speak, but there are countless people who have benefited from what he gave out via distance education in that platform.
Absolutely. So, that's really good. And, you know, now that you've kind of opened up the history, obviously we went back several thousand years there to get it started. So fast forward a little bit, you know, but even I think about just in the modern age, if you will, this idea of distance learning, remote education. And, you know, I've heard of old, like, I think of the classic Pensacola Abeka book program. You know, I mean, they have been doing it by way of like VHS tapes for, I mean, decades, really. And then even before maybe the internet, I mean, you had correspondence where, you know, you were, I mean, essentially just mailing things back and forth, you know?
Yeah, that was Moody's bread and butter.
Exactly. So I like how, you know, obviously you started in a great spot, but even in recent history, it's not a foreign concept. But I think we can say, and again, we can blame it, or I don't know if we want to say blame, but we can credit, blame, however you want to see it, the pandemic. But even before then, I think of like the University of Phoenix. They've been a big online presence now for years, it seems like. And Liberty University in the, maybe more in the Christian realm. And so, like you said, it does seem to be an option, but let's play devil, or I'll play devil's advocate for a moment. And you, since you have now experienced kind of both worlds, because even at your time when you were actually at, you know, West Coast and you were, you know, doing a lot of in-classroom teaching, you were also helping them start their online program, doing a lot of online teaching. I remember I was there, over 10 years ago, there was already online offerings. And so you've been in this world, kind of had your foot in both worlds, if you will, for a long time. Let's talk about maybe, again, just so I can play devil's advocate, the pros and cons of both. So maybe let's start with the more conventional route, the in-classroom. Let's talk about, you know, in your experience, what are some of the best benefits of the in-classroom on-campus experience?
Yeah, so it's not just when you talk about the conventional route, it's not just the in-classroom. It's everything that comes with it. It's the campus life. It's the activities. It's the going to an instructor's home. It's all of that comes with it that you can't necessarily duplicate in a different environment online. So comparing just instruction to instruction, I don't really see a pro or a con there as much as I just see all the extra stuff that comes with it.
And I think that's a fair way of putting it because, you know, looking back on it now, of course, the way that it was presented to me, I didn't really have another option. You know, I was 18 years old, you know, young, and I can value the experience of actually leaving home. I think there's a lot of argument there that leaving home and learning to do life on your own in one way or another is valuable. And, you know, just, I mean, simple things like, I mean, it sounds crazy, but like I never did a load of laundry on my own until I got to college. You know, my mom always did it for me. You know, she always kept telling me. She always kept telling me. The iron. I never got around the iron. I just learned to put the suit coat on over the shirt trick. That was me. But yeah, my mom would always tell me, hey, I'm going to make you do your own laundry, whatever. She never did. But when I got to college, I had to learn, you know, simple things like learning to get yourself out of bed, get to class on time, you know, and just live life to some degree on your own. Now, in the type of college we were at, I mean, it was a very there was a lot of structure. And so, you know, you didn't have like a crazy amount of freedom. But at the same time, I'll never forget one day after a service there, an evening service, I was coming out and I had a friend come up to me. This was like my first two or three weeks of college. And he said, hey, man, we're all going to Wingstop. You want to go? My first response was, and I didn't say it, but I thought it and I almost said it, was, let me go ask my mom. And then I thought, I remember this moment, just, it was like, I don't have to ask my mom. I can just go, you know? And so, you know, there's just this sense of, again, that freedom and learning to do life on your own. So there's the benefits of really campus life as opposed to maybe just in classroom. Now, to maybe try to dig a little deeper then, I mean, what could we maybe say is better? I'm talking about isolating the classroom itself. What might be better about sitting in a classroom that's a physical classroom where you're with other students, the teacher's physical, than sitting like, you know, like we are now, where it's a digital experience and everything's done through a screen and those like that. Is there any, you know, massive benefits that can be maybe argued there?
Yeah, massive. Let's think through. Obviously, there's one of the things that is a strength to the conventional classroom is the structure. It meets at this time on this date without exception. In an online environment, week to week, that shifts based on your schedule. Sitting in a classroom, another strength, I guess, is you drop a lot of things to move to go to college. Whereas if you're online, you are now adding things to your schedule. You're not necessarily taking things off. So, but the instruction itself, it really depends on the student. So if that makes sense. In other words, like I've sat in an online classroom and in an on-campus classroom where I have mentored people in either setting because they really, really had a heart for it and wanted it. And I've had in both settings people who never interacted with me. So it wasn't necessarily the platform by which I delivered the content. It was really the desire on the student. I think that's an important distinction to be made. Sometimes we try to compare apples to apples, but there's a variable here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the student himself.
I think something in, again, if we look at education as a whole, maybe American education, if we want to call it that, I think something that's been forgotten in the system, if you will, is not everybody learns the same. We have different learning styles. You know, I don't know, I can't remember all of them, but there's the, you know, the auditory and kinesthetic and whatever. I can't remember all the terms. But there are different learning styles. And for me, just as an example, I always make the joke that I was actually in the conventional classroom setting. I was a really horrible student. I didn't have the attention span to sit there and dial in and focus. But now I've noticed that I love listening to podcasts. I love listening to audiobooks. And so, you know, I've got my AirPods in almost all the time, just listening to something. And it's almost like a passive type of learning. But for me, it actually, it clicks and it works, you know? I go to church every week, but, you know, even sometimes sitting in church, it's like, I can get antsy and whatever, and this is all good. But if I listen to a sermon on a podcast, for me, this isn't true for everybody. For me, a lot of times I get more out of something as far as learning and grasping when I kind of consume content in that way. And like you said, though, that's going to defer person to person. So I think that's a really good point. Well, let's flip to the other side. Let's start to talk about the virtual learning and, you know, the online distance learning. What are some of the, actually, hold up, pause before we go there. Let's actually truly talk about some cons here, maybe, of the in-classroom. I think we've already touched on them, but the in-classroom on campus, what can be some actual cons of that, maybe some drawbacks that we may have already touched on some of them or not mentioned any, but.
Sure. Yeah. Here's a few that come to mind that I just observed, and they're not automatic again, but these are possible pitfalls because of the rise of cost to move to a campus, pay room and board and tuition. And if you don't have any help or support, you have to get a job. And now, so you observe this, I observe this, people working 40, 50 hours to pay for the education that they're not getting because they're failing classes.
Yeah.
Because they're working so much and there's this vicious cycle. So that's a con. It can be mitigated. We mitigated it for over 25 years when I worked at West Coast, but it is something to be aware of. The other thing I think of is more big picture con. Here's what happens often in an on-campus setting. The recruiters come to the churches and they talk to the youth pastor or the pastor and they want those best students that church has. And then they want to bring them to their campus. So here's what happens from the pastor's point of view. He's investing in these people. He's pouring his life into this young person. And if it's a small church like I grew up in, then you're heavily involved in it. And now all of a sudden, some of your best workers are now moving across country to get an education and they're not coming back. So that's a con. And this was a con for me when I went to college 30 plus years ago. I preached regularly as a teenager because of the types of churches I grew up in. Like it's just, if you said God called you to preach, then you started right then. So I grew up preaching at 16 years old, you know. When I went to Bible college to learn the education side of it, I rarely spoke. So there was this outlet. You know, my ministry changed from preaching or leading a kid's class to making sure kids went to the bathroom at the right time. My ministry looked different. So I think that's a con. If somebody's already plugged
in for me, I think the first time that I saw some type of promotional video for Veritas, I think that was Kurt Skelly there. Kind of back when he first got involved and he was kind of making that argument. And that's the first time that really clicked with me. And again, I would not change anything about my experience and how it sure. went for me. I am where I am today because, you know, I did do college in the way that I did. But I was very much can identify with that. I was really involved with my church as a teenager, had a lot of opportunities to lead and to speak into things. And then, yeah, when I went to college, it was like, well, you know, at my church, I was one of like maybe five that were really in, and it was a larger church, but that were really like, you know, into ministry. Yeah. And like, that was our thing. And when I went to college, now I'm one of 1,000. And so, yeah, I mean, like, and I had the opportunity to serve and I got into the heavily involved in the bus ministry and I enjoyed it. And, you know, kind of over the years worked my way up to bus captain status and things like that. I still got those opportunities to some degree, but yeah, I think about it, you know, when I heard that pitch from, I think his big pitch from Brother Skelly there was right at the end was, don't leave, stay home. You know, stay plugged in your church. We'll teach you from afar. You stay there. And I thought, well, you know what? Honestly, if I would have heard that pitch at that time, it would have been really appealing. And so especially for those that are older students that maybe are already married, already have a family, that in particular, because I, you know, you saw many of them over the years. And I even saw a few in my time there was several like married, you know, older guys who would, I mean, just uproot their family and come and good for them. But at the same time, that's a lot, you know, that's not just moving one person. Now you're moving a whole family. And that alone is, it's probably a topic in and of itself and a demographic to discuss.
The downside of some of that as well that you probably observed is often when they moved there, when they had to get a job to pay for the school, they couldn't find a job on the shift that allowed them to go to the traditional classroom time slot. So now they moved across country to get an education, but they're not even in classes. Their kids get to benefit from a great Christian school. They're in a great church.
Yeah. Well, and you all.
But they're stuck.
Absolutely. I watched guys do it. I watched, I'm thinking of two or three faces that are coming to mind of guys who started as you read adults with kids and they finished and good for them. But yeah, I also, going back to something you said earlier, I also remember watching many a guy, whether it was a married guy or just another guy there, having to get up and go stand in the back of the classroom so he wouldn't fall asleep because his shift was, you know, 3 p.m. to midnight every day or later. And then he'd have to go to 7:30 class. And, you know, I knew guys that just, that was their life for 4 straight years. And it's like, I don't know how they did it. Honestly, I'm grateful I never had to go to that extreme to pay for
and
my
sometimes
education.
5 straight years and 6 straight years.
Yeah. Just kind of has a way of dragging on there because like you said, unfortunately they either have to cut their class load or sadly many of them, like they just wind up failing classes and that's obviously something, but like I said, it can all be overcome, but at the same time, something to be considered if that's the route you're going to go. Well, since we're talking the cons, let's shift over and maybe just talk some cons of the online learning, if there are any, before we actually get into the pros. And so I'll let you kind of lead there.
Yeah, so online learning isn't for everybody. Yeah, I want everybody to come to my school, but not everybody should. Some people need more discipline, need more structure, need the personal interaction where they can physically walk to someone's desk. I can't duplicate that. I can give my cell number. I can say, let's set up a Zoom meeting. But it's not immediate. It's not like, hey, can I catch you for a minute after class? So we work hard to try to create community, work hard to be available. But, you know, I can't duplicate that one-on-one. So that's a con. And for some people, that's something that probably should be considered. Here's another con, depending on how you look at it. Most people aren't going to meet their spouse at an online college. So sometimes I'll have people say, yeah, but if I don't go away to college, how am I going to meet my wife? And I'll just look at them and say, that's a great question. How did they do that before Bible college? And so we'll just sort of laugh, you know, like, but in our circles, we sort of made Bible college as that place to go meet your spouse, go pay $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to pay to find your spouse. And they're worth it. I don't want anybody to push back to how much is your spouse, but at the same time, that hasn't always been the normal place to go.
Yeah.
So we don't have an online dating service.
Well, I was going to say, there's an idea there, the Vera online dating service that comes along with the singles there. Yeah. You know,
Just put it under student services.
Yeah, get that under development there. And it's, I think, even more than just, obviously, your spouse is a very important factor, but also the other potential connections that you might make. You know, for example, if you're sharing, you know, maybe a virtual classroom, you might meet people, but you're not going to meet the guys in the dorm that you didn't take a class with, or the guy at lunch, or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, and there's many of those connections that I made that I'm still friends, you know, we're still friends to this day. There's definitely a social aspect to be considered. And without going off too much of a tangent here, I do think that that is something that whether it's education or just work or whatever, that is something that's getting kind of lost in our ever-growing digital society, is the need of physical connection. You know, that's why, and I think you would agree, there's nothing wrong. Like you said, online learning is not for everybody, but it's an absolutely viable option. But if you're going to do online learning, let's do some other things in person. Don't do online learning and online church and online work. And basically, I mean, really think about it. I'm set up here in my home office. And I work from home and whatever, but in theory, I can do everything and never have to leave my house. You know, I can Amazon and Instacart everything here. I can have all my meetings this. Yep. I can watch church online, but obviously that is, and we, if we learned anything from the year 2020, it's that, that is not healthy. And that is not beneficial. So, there can be an extreme of just virtual in general of, hey, you can't do everything remotely and online. Sure. You need physical interaction with people. But to your point, you can get your learning online and you can have your social life from, like you said, your church or other outlets there. Yeah.
Your church.
One
more con would be the technology itself. If you're in a remote place that doesn't have access to internet, you can't benefit from it. If you're not within driving distance of Starbucks or McDonald's to borrow their Wi-Fi,
and I think that's less of a concern as time goes on, but I know there's still places, you know, but you know, Elon Musk, he's getting Starlink everywhere. And so at some point that's not going to be as much of a concern. Yeah. Go Elon.
Go.
Let's shift in the conversation, talking a little bit about what are the pros? What are the benefits to learning online? Again, we've already touched on some of them, but for you, what are the benefits?
Yeah. Two come to mind off the bat. One is affordability and one is flexibility. Let me start with the flexibility aspect. So when you go away to college and you're going to live in a dorm, there's usually a requirement that you have to be a full-time student. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're taking 5, 6, 7 classes. And if you're in the boat of working 50 to 60 hours and failing half of them, it's just money going out the window. But if you are successful to take 2 classes at a time or 3 classes at a time and pass them and not pay for the full price, just sort of pay as you go, that hits the flexibility and the affordability aspect at the same time. So at Veritas, most of our classes are 8 weeks. Some online colleges are 7 weeks. Some might be maybe a little bit more, but 7 or 8 weeks is usually the magic number. So if somebody says, I can't take 5 classes in a semester online, you don't have to. You take 2 or 3 at a time and you still take 5 or 6 in a semester. So that flexibility. And the other idea of flexibility is within the week. I work X to X or whatever, but I can do my lectures this time. I can fit it around my schedule.
So yeah. And that's a great, I mean, really just two fantastic gardens, affordability, flexibility, just so we have a little insight of how things work there. Is everything pretty much modular, as in, you know, is it like you take a class and we're done by class, you move to the next one, or can you take multiple classes at once? Or is it up to you?
You can take multiple classes. Yeah. You can take multiple classes at once if you want. We always say take one the first time to learn, get the feel for it. It's different. So don't just go gung-ho and say, I'm going to take 6 classes because with God, all things are possible. Take one, get a win under your belt, learn how much time it takes. It is different. It's an accelerated pace. What you would normally take in a 15-week semester, you're taking in 8 weeks. And so take one at a time. You have flexibility week to week. So if a module starts on Monday and closes at Sunday night, anytime within that week, you can watch your lectures, interact with other students, interact with the professors, get your assignments in, but then once the week is done, we've moved to the next module, and that's sort of under the blood now.
Yeah. So again, flexibility is huge there. It's a big aspect of, you know, online learning. And you know, again, that's why, even again, to apply it to other avenues other than education, you know, that's why this content that we put out, even on a podcast for this very podcast, it's designed to be, hey, you consume it on your time. You know, you download it in your app and listen, or go watch it on YouTube whenever you have the chance. We don't really, you know, it's not broadcasted live. It's not, you know, and really it kind of comes down to this whole, you know, shift in the digital culture, and even the consumer industry, if you will, from, you know, back in the day, you had to watch everything live on TV. You know, if you wanted to catch, you know, that next episode of whatever, you had to watch it in the moment, or you really missed it. And now, streaming, it was gone. You know, hey, you just go and you pop it on whenever you want. And, you know, I think about going back to think about my daughter, like, she does not understand a world where TV is dictating you're not dictating TV, you know. Like anytime she wants to watch a show, you know, she's all into Bluey's all the craze right now. Hey, I want to watch Bluey. Okay, that's great. She goes to Disney Plus, boom, pulls it up, she's watching it. Whereas before, it would have been like, well, Bluey comes on at 3:30, you know, this afternoon, you know. And I remember my mom, you know, right. I was all in like Mr. Rogers, it was, and she said, well, Mr. Rogers doesn't start for another 2 hours, you know. So all that to say, a little bit of a rabbit chase in there, but things have changed. And that flexibility and convenience, whether in your leisure or in this case in education, can really help you, you know, in kind of keeping yourself on schedule.
I used to have to wait until Saturday morning to watch Saturday morning cartoons as a kid. Yeah, the world has changed.
It really
has. I'll speak as well, just from the standpoint of a pro. You know, I went the traditional route. I got my undergrad on campus, but then I've had 4 degrees I've taken distance education. Hmm. So I'm not only an instructor on both sides, I'm a student on both sides. I would not have had the option when West Coast said, we're going to pursue accreditation. And by the way, that means, Mike, you're going to need to get this degree, and this degree. I didn't have the option to just say, okay, let me move my family for the next 5 years to go get these degrees and move back. I was able to stay plugged in, teach my singles class, lead my ministries, be involved in the school. Why? Because I could do it with a flexible schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's the flexibility, I think, is huge, especially for those who, real quick, do you know the demographic breakdown? I'm sure you do, of kind of your ages, like how many of the students there at Veritas are that coming out of high school going into, you know, their early 20s versus how many are maybe a little bit older, more established with families and so forth?
So I've been the president now for the last year. I've been working with Veritas for 2 years. When I first started, the average age of a student was 34-ish, 35. Now the average age is 26, 27.
Wow.
So we really have a full smorgasbord. We have a department that just focuses on dual enrollment. So we're looking at high school students. Let us help you save time, save money. Most of them will not stay with us. Once they graduate, they'll go up to a traditional setting, but some stay. Mm-hmm. So we have the dual enrollment, but we also go all the way up to a terminal degree, 2 terminal degrees now. And so those terminal degrees aren't being pursued by, you know, a 20-year-old, early 20s. Sure. They've already had to get some things done. Our fastest growing departments are our grad and post-grad departments, which are scaling, but it is neat to see the average age coming down.
Yeah, no, that is, and I think a lot of that again is just credited to that's how where things are going, you know. And so that I think is a great place to kind of pause our conversation and maybe in the future pick up on a couple of things. First of all, I look forward to talking to you about the future of higher education in general, but also. Like you said, it's speaking to kind of the median age there that you're reaching many of them still, and the fact that, you know, you're offering a lot of your Veritas there is offering a lot of post-grad work. What are your arguments for pursuing, you know, if you're already a pastor, church leader, pursuing more? So I'm looking forward to picking that up in a future episode. But thanks so much for joining us. And thank you to our audience for joining us. And we'll see you in the next episode.
We are so glad you joined us for this episode. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. Also, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this podcast with your friends. You can connect with us online at mustincrease.com. And if you'd like a topic or question to be featured on a future episode, send us a text to 615-900-4461. Thanks again for joining us for this episode, and we look forward to seeing you next time as we continue to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of others right here on the Must Increase podcast.